It's a delight to be here today with Parker. I met Parker at the Southeast Tory Conference in North Carolina. I was going to say last month, but it's actually 2 months ago now, isn't it? And that was such a terrific experience. The whole conference was an experience. And I wanted everybody else to get a chance to meet Parker and then also have you talk, Parker, about your experience at the conference. So maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about your life and little bit about how you grew up and what you studied, and then maybe how you first got on the radar of the Southeast Shore Conference and got interested in it.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, it's great to be here today, and it was awesome to get to meet you and everyone else in South Estuary. So very grateful for that, and grateful to be here. So, yeah. So if I go back at trying to think, how far back to go, but I was raised here in Charlotte. I live in Charlotte, so North Carolina. I'm North Carolinian, and lived here my whole life. Great place to be. So great family. And raised in a Southern Baptist church here in Charlotte pretty much my entire life growing up. But I would say, definitely on the and this is not meant to be a brag, but on the gifted kid side of things, as a kid, I was homeschooled some, and then I went to a private school for a lot of my earlier upbringing. And I say it's not a brag because it comes with a lot of costs later in life. You get by really well as a young student, but then later you're like, oh, I actually have to work on things. You actually have to put in effort later that you didn't have to before. So, yeah. So I was raised there and here, and then I eventually went to college for computer science and philosophy. So I have a double major in computer science and philosophy, and really enjoyed that. I found that philosophy offered something I had been missing in a lot of my prior schooling, right? A lot of times in high school or middle school, you don't get to have the deep conversations that you want, right? Even in places that are smaller classrooms or whatever, like it can be hard because sometimes there are issues with the time and with dogma, right? So I went to a Christian school and I had a pretty strict dogma in some ways, right, in some of my classes. So there wasn't as much of a I couldn't have as many of those open conversations that I wanted, right, to question things. But philosophy was awesome, right? So I was really super stoked that I could go into a class and ask whatever I wanted, right? It was awesome. And then everyone was like respected that. You could disagree with people, that was fine, right? You could disagree with the professor, that's fine, right? Like a really good place to be. So I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the merging of the two fields. I wrote a paper in college on one of my capstone papers was on AI and ethics, right? And this was before, I graduated before we actually had good AI, right? We didn't have I'm trying to think about when it was, but we certainly didn't have but maybe GPT-2, maybe it was before that. It might have been an even earlier model than that. So there was nothing like that, right? It was more speculative on if we achieve increasingly better AI, what's that going to look like? How should we build ethical frameworks? And it was really just a call for start working on ethical frameworks now, right? So I got to present that at a conference and all that good stuff. Looking back, it feels anemic or inadequate, right, for what we're dealing with today. But so let's see, we can fast forward a little, and or do you have any questions, I guess, for that sort of chunk? I know that was a big segment of my life, and it was just
Well,
like,
actually,
yeah.
I have some philosophy questions.
Sure,
I probably should leave those until later, maybe.
okay, yeah, and we can certainly talk about anything
Yeah.
you want in that regard. I will, I feel increasingly sophomoric as time goes on when I deal with anything with that, but, yeah, so,
That is the problem with life, isn't it? The
yeah.
longer you live, the older you get, the more you learn, the more you realize, oh my goodness, there's a big world out there.
Yeah, that is, and we should talk about that too, probably, at some point. But so yeah, in between, I guess, like after graduating, I went to work at a local company in IT, and have kind of sp I spent most of my time and continue to spend my time working in automation. I love the thought of freeing people from menial tasks. At least that's what I tell myself, right? Like, in a lot of ways, right? But you know, you see people who are doing processes that are really repetitive, right? Every day for like their whole career. And you're like, how can we help make this better, right? What can we do using technology to free you up to do something that's meaningful, right? Or, you know, perceive as meaningful or more meaningful than copying something from an email and putting it in a spreadsheet, right? So a lot of my job has revolved around finding fixes for things like that, designing systems to help with dealing with that in various ways throughout the company. And I've been doing that for a while now. So maybe 8 years, something like that. And so let's see, you know, throughout that time, I guess we had the pandemic. And I'll say, you know, this is kind of a formative moment for me. I got really sick during the pandemic. I had a really rough time, which can collapse a lot of the philosophical models or frameworks you have, right? Because they suddenly come in contact with reality really hard. And so I would say there was a time for a few years where I was really things were a lot more shaky from like a mental framework standpoint or from a philosophical framework standpoint, because I was suddenly like, oh wow, life is very real, right? It's not this philosophy that I've been learning in classes. It's like, how do you take all that stuff and actually apply it, right? And so I was seeing the first sort of rubber meets the road in a lot of ways, right? That happens at various times, I'm sure, for lots of people, and much earlier for a lot of people too. But upon like reflection of that, it was like the first time when I really was like, okay, yeah, I've got a lot of things to think about. And over a couple of years, it led to this sort of thought of like, wow, I kind of wonder if I was a good philosopher at all, right? At any point, right? Because I kept all these ideas in a nice ephemeral, you know, space. They're all theoretical, and that's nice, and I love that. And had maybe, you know, without being too like overly introspective, I accused myself a little bit of, you know, shielding myself from anything that would lead to too much existential dread or too much, you know, like I kept that at a nice arm's length away so that I didn't have to think about that too much. But you know, between becoming really sick and developing something that at the time seemed like a chronic illness, between that and then kind of some life changes that happened a few years after that, I really kind of had to start from scratch, it felt like, in terms of frameworks. And so that was maybe, you know, a couple of years ago. And it's kind of been a process of rebuilding or taking a break from rebuilding at various points, right? And so that kind of leads us up to South Estuary in some ways, right? Because I was really over the summer going through a rough time. I had a breakup in the spring, and then the summer was just kind of rough. And I somehow stumbled on Paul Vanderclay, right? And this little corner of the internet. And I'm very much like a, I don't know, there's a word for it, but I love keeping track of things. I love data. I love like, you know, traces and storytelling, right? Storytelling is great and super important. And so you know, if I think about it, I actually think I know exactly how I found Paul. I think it was, I had made an X account, right? Which, if you're having like troubles with your mental health or anything like that, don't make an X account. I don't recommend it. Like, I don't think it's a very good thing to do, because it actually makes things a lot worse sometimes. But I was like, what's this about? I haven't had a Twitter since I was in high school, basically. I was like, let's go see what people are talking about now. And fortuitously, somehow I think I encountered Annie Crawford, and was
Oh,
following
wow.
her. And then she mentioned someone who I had seen somewhere else, right? She was like, oh, we're talking about Paul Vanderclay. I was like, who's Paul Vanderclay? You know, I saw his name mentioned somewhere. And I think she had a conversation on PugsCast. Again, I haven't seen this. I don't know anything about them, but I was like, oh, let me see what they say about this guy that I've heard of. So I watched that little like rundown of Paul. And I was like, oh, that sounds really interesting. I should look into Paul Vanderclay. And then, you know, you watch like a couple hundred hours of Paul Vanderclay, right? You know, you're like, oh, okay, like, you
Okay, so
know,
I do have to ask.
yeah, sure.
So you listened to a little bit of Annie, and then you listened to Pugscast, you said?
I think that's what it's called. It
Oh,
was
okay.
she had been invited on, I think it's a couple pastors, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And then you stumbled on Paul, and then you didn't just go from Paul to whatever Paul was talking about. You stayed with Paul for 200 hours. So
I mean,
why?
something like that, something like that. Well, because Paul's so good at covering a breadth, right? He really captures a lot of the TLC in his content, right? Because he references so much and then pulls together all these little pieces, you can get a flavor of a lot of things. Now, I did go down other little like avenues, right, at various times, but he just does such a good job of bringing it all together into something coherent, and not just coherent, but that you can trust, right? Like you, he's good at building rapport, and I understand the framework he's coming from in a lot of ways, right? So once you've seen a little bit, you're like, okay, I can trust you to mediate a lot of this content, right? Maybe I don't feel so good about like going out there and being exposed to a ton of different things all at once, but I can trust you, Paul, right? Or whoever, right? But I think Paul in this particular example very well, right? I trust him to take some of that and to think about it and bring it through a worldview and a framework that I understand, or like I said, trust, and that helps, right? Particularly when you don't feel like you're in the space yourself to do it, because you can't always be on the cutting edge, right? You can't always be dealing with everything like out there. So you offload some of your cognition, right, to a trusted figure, sort of, right? And that helps, right? Now, again, it helped me
Well,
discover other,
so when you first found Paul, though, did you just start where he is now, or did you go back a ways?
No. I definitely like shuffled through, right? It was very much like a, let's look at I think I have that classic sort of habit of when I encounter a YouTube channel that I think is interesting, sort by popular, right? And see like what are the top 20 sort of things that they talk about, and then pick some of those.
Okay.
Now, I was definitely more in a mode of like constantly consuming at the time, so I was just listening in the background and just like, so sometimes it would just flow from one thing to another. But I definitely did go back to what does 2017 Paul look like? What is the early like conversations about Jordan
Okay, because
Peterson,
I was going to say, if you
right?
started from now and then tried to keep going, he's so far up the chain
Yes.
already. It would
Yes.
really be
He
hard to
is
follow it.
very far up the chain. So I definitely listened to some things that I feel like helped, right, from further back, help kind of capture earlier ideas and like see some of the progression, right? Sometimes he does that himself though, right? Sometimes he does that, like it's kind of a funny thing from a YouTube standpoint, or from a videography standpoint. I love movies, I love videos, I love film, but it's very weird when you have this, like it's you and yourself is right here, right? He's watching himself, and in that one he's commentating on something else, and you get this sort of inception effect, which is fun, right? But yeah, he does every so often do some of those retrospective ones where he's talking about something else he's already priorly talked about to bring it into here, and you start to pick up little pieces of that too, right? So you get this kind of coherent, you start to get a coherent idea of where things have moved from and where they're going. Yeah, so I think that's how I got into this whole corner. But really, like I said, within just like 2 weeks, I had watched a lot of content, right? So yeah, definitely it had been learning a lot, right? Because there's a lot of lingo. I think we talked about that a little bit, right? And there are a lot of different connections with people. And I would say by the time I got to South Estuary, which was maybe 3 or 4 weeks after I first encountered this little corner of the internet, which we can talk more about that too, like the getting there. But I had some idea of some of the players, right, the big ones within the space, but like there's certainly a bunch that I don't, right, at that point. And even now I would say I'm only a little more familiar, with like a handful more, but it's a pretty big space, right? Like I didn't understand
Yeah.
anything about Grimm, right? I knew nothing about Grimm, like really before I went there. I knew he was around, right? But now I know more. But yeah, it was very interesting, and I love learning. So it was a fun sort of, at the same time, like a fun experience of just like, wow, a whole new little world that actually, it takes something that I liked, because I liked the 2017 Jordan Peterson. Back in the day, I was one of those people who followed him pretty regularly, but had kind of stopped, right? And it was nice to see someone who was carrying on some of the things, seemingly, right? That the original lobster Jordan Peterson had kind of started, back then, with like the 12 rules sort of stuff. So that was a good and interesting experience.
Well, so before you went to Southeast Story, did you tell anybody that you were going to go to this thing? Any
No.
of the people that you know? Okay.
No.
Afterwards, have you told anybody about what you did?
Sure. Some, yeah.
Okay, so
Yeah.
how did you describe it to them?
Yes. It comes, I think it depends on who it is, right? But mostly I say like, oh, it's kind of, a philosophy theology conference. Something like that, right? Is how I describe it. Again, and then some people will be like, okay, that makes sense. You have a degree in philosophy, whatever. And they don't really like question like what that means. And so I'm like, yeah, it's a, with a kind of a focus. I think later afterwards I describe it as something, with a strong focus on small group discussion. And maybe I'll talk about a little bit about like the estuary protocol and like how I think that's useful. But again, it depends on how much depth we're going into, because some people are just like, oh yeah, cool, a conference, and that's fine. But it is a little hard to describe, right? Particularly before going there, right? Because I was in it was only just due to the fact that it was nearby, right? That felt very much like I didn't know it was happening until 2 weeks before, basically, or less seemingly. And I was like, oh, this thing's like just a few hours away from me. And I really like what I'm hearing from this little corner. I should just go to that. I really, just to see what it's like, or just to experience it in person. Because, as you start to familiarize yourself with a lot of the tenets of the corner, embodiment is a big one, right? You hear that thrown around a lot. A lot of people talk about embodying and about being places in person with people, right? That's, I would say, like, that is something that is unique about the corner, or maybe not entirely unique, but it's a very powerful facet of it that it as an entity really strives to get people to interact in a way that it's easy. It's very easy to just exist in a digital space, right? But this produces a nice positive pressure towards also exist in a physical space with people, right? Connect on that level. And that's, again, rare, I think.
Well, do you see, so in my mind, there's sort of different levels of digital space and different levels of embodiment. So,
Sure. Absolutely.
of course,
Absolutely.
now I've met you before,
Yeah.
so it's easier to feel that this is embodied because we know each
Right.
other a little bit, right? We talk quite a bit at Estuary. But we're not really embodied. It
No.
would
Yeah.
probably be a it would be a very different experience. Well, it would be a somewhat different experience if we were sitting across the table talking to each other right now.
Absolutely.
But this is also a far removed from what you would call a digital experience, where you're just scrolling and commenting and things like
Right.
that, or even participating in some seminar or lecture or something, and you come in and ask a question here or there.
Yeah.
So how do you see that whole difference between embodied and digital?
Yeah, there's definitely a hierarchy, kind of as you describe it, right? You can start at a very like parasocial, well, parasocial may actually influence a lot of the digital, but there's a very just only parasocial sort of existence where it's just like, I just consume this content and it informs me and changes who I am, maybe some. And I think that I know the person, right? I watch your channel and I think, I know Karen, right? I've seen tons and tons of her content. I know Paul, right? I know what he's about. But that's not really, that's like the furthest away, kind of, right? Where you have this idea and but it's still pretty abstract. And then you might get to like interacting. So you get into a digital space, like you said, maybe you're in a Q&A, or maybe you're on one of the Discord servers or a chat server of some sort, right? Speaking with the people. And then maybe you'll move from there to, you show up in like one of the rando sort of things, or one of the just like pop in kind of video chats where you're interacting with people. But all of those, all those that you're starting to interact in require probably time to become valuable, like the estuary does too. But you have to be there for a while to understand like the flavor. Like any given Discord server, like you won't understand how it works until you've been there for a while or interacted with it for a while. And then, but it's more embodied, right? It is like you're saying, like seeing you there is definitely a very different experience than just seeing your icon somewhere, right? Or commenting on one of your videos, right?
But I'm wondering if you, well, like when you interact on the Discord, now that you've gotten comfortable with it, do you feel like that's a personalized experience where you actually are having a relational experience with people?
Sometimes, it's not really personal until the other person knows you, right? That sounds very obvious, right? But when I think about digital spaces, because I'm in, 100 Discord servers, probably something like
Oh, wow.
that, right? And that's not, that's just because,
I can't
like,
even figure out Paul's, so I'm really
sure,
impressed by that.
Well, I grew not grew up with it, but like I was there pretty
Yeah.
early. I run one for my friends, right? So that's where I actually interact with my friends primarily in a Discord server. We post all of our news. It's a social media basically for us, minus a lot of the other problems of social media. I actually think it's a very good one, because I know everyone there, or they're at least, or maybe they're one step removed. They're a friend of a friend, and I think that's super healthy, right? It's very valuable because we have the rapport, we have embodied experiences that we've had together for most of us, right? We've seen each other and we know each other, but we get to continue at a distance, right? We get to keep up with each other. And so, but building that in other places requires like the other person to know you, at least know your avatar, right? And I don't mean like the literal avatar, but the avatar you put on when you are in these spaces, right? Who you are and what you're like and all that stuff. You can do that pretty quick, right? I can get a sense of who someone is in a few days of reading their stuff or maybe thinking about what they've said or interacting with them, having conversations that involve them. But it's always going to be flatter. And I think, it really depends on how much time you spend in the space. Like I wouldn't say that I've talked a ton in like maybe Paul's Discord or some of the other satellite ones, enough to like feel like I'm really known. Now, some people who have met me in person talk to me there, and the fact that they know me in person fixes that, right? But yeah, you certainly have to spend time and effort to become a figure within a space like that, or to get people to know you well.
So the bottom line is we probably just need a lot more estuary conferences so people can have that physical connection in order to make all the digital stuff more meaningful for them.
Yeah. Oh, and I think things like Rando's chats do that a lot, right? Once again, a technology in the social sense that really helps, right? Put a person to an avatar, right? Does a lot, right? It really does, because we can condense the amount that we're getting to know each other right here, from days and days of, reading people's messages over time to a very acute point of like high salience comparatively, I think. Yeah, I think that's really the big difference. Of course, obviously in person, again, hugely different. But I'll say this because I've been thinking about this for a while. And I think we talked a little bit about electricity during when I first met you. I was talking about like the internet stuff, some, but the flattened people, right? The flattened actors that you see within digital spaces are easier to handle in a lot of ways, right? They're easier to understand because you don't have to think about all the ways that they're a person in some ways, right? For the better or worse, right? You don't have to like really get to know someone. You can just know what they're like, right? Enough and have like a big sense of who they are. And I think for some people, it just makes it not a stressful social situation, if that makes sense, right? It helps keep them, they wouldn't be so good at doing that if they had to do it in person, right? Particularly with like hundreds of other people, right? Way outside their Dunbar number or whatever. Yeah. So there's something to that. I don't really know, obviously I think there's a huge value in interacting with people in person, but at the same time, I understand the appeal. And why it works so well, like to build these communities.
Well, and like I think one of the things that's great about the rando conversations is that, I mean, I've had in my lifetime, I've had thousands, hundreds of thousands probably of conversations where you run into somebody you haven't seen for a while, and the conversation consists of, oh, where are you living now? Oh, you're still working there. Oh, and what are you going to be doing for Christmas? And you have any vacation plans? That's the extent of it, right?
Sure.
But on a randos conversation, you're digging deep into some existential problem in the world or something that's really affecting your life right now because you can't figure your way through some, maybe it's some arcane abstract idea, but it's actually affecting your life right now.
Yes.
And those are the kind of things that you can talk about with people from the corner because we've gotten accustomed to getting to that level of depth very quickly.
Absolutely. And that is another huge benefit of the corner, is that it basically gets up people pretty quickly up to speed on, like, here are some foundational frameworks that we're dealing with very loosely, and we're going to be willing to talk about them from the start, like you said, just like, all right, let's talk about something that really matters, right? Without even having to worry about the other stuff. The Discord spaces and things like that can also facilitate the building of the softer sort of, I think it was, I just read a quote from Heinlein, Robert Heinlein, and was talking about, like, the small talk and stuff like that is the lubricant or whatever for social interaction, right? Or, the little spaces do that too, right? Like, you get to get some of that as well. But yeah, then you get to go into Rando's chat, which is, very close, like, it's not very far away, and you can go straight into the depth, right? Without, so you get a good balance, right, in somewhere like Discord or in the comment sections or things like that. So there's a good mix. But yeah, you're right. And I think it helps again that people are primed on conversations with Verveke or conversations with Vanderclay, or and they're, referencing things like, Jordan Peterson sometimes or whatever, right? So there are lots of nice shared underlying, at least vague ideas of what we're looking for, what we're going to talk about, or the level of the thing we're going to talk about, if nothing else. That helps a lot. And it doesn't take much, I don't think, to get you there. If you wanted to, like, if you're getting started, right?
Well, so when you were getting started, did you have a feeling like, oh, these people have all this inside baseball language and so they're kind of in their own little clique with their inside lingo. Did that feel off-putting to you or did you
Not
want in?
to me. Not to me. I wanted in. I wanted in. I have, gosh, what a, this is not even like the total right word, but I have, like, Gnostic tendencies, right? I love secret knowledge, right? I love learning new things and like figuring out little, like, systems and stuff. So that's great, right? I didn't have any issue with that. I can understand why some people might, and, like, but no, when I encounter new things, I want to go figure out where it comes from. Like, why do they use this term? Like, where does that come from? I love, like, connecting that dot later and being like, oh, okay, right. This is why they talk about embodiment, or this is why, whatever, right? Insert your particular meme within the sphere, right? Yeah, no, I do like that a lot. So it wasn't a problem for me, right? And again, having some basis in knowing how, like, Jordan Peterson was, and that gives you enough foundation, right? If you had just listened to some Jordan Peterson and or read 12 Rules for Life, like, you could start there, and you could listen to some early Paul Vanderclay, and then you could listen to some later Paul Vanderclay, and you'll have 80% of what you need to get into the conversation, which again is very valuable.
So I get the feeling that you have a desire to see other people be able to find their way in because one of the things that you've done, which is just brilliant, you've kind of updated the this little corner search engine, and it's amazing.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's working. I'm glad it's
And
working.
so I need to put that in the description link so. Because anybody can access that, right? If they have the link. Okay. Why don't you talk a little bit about why you wanted to get involved with that and kind of how you went about it?
Sure. So, I think I talked a little bit, and I still don't know him super well. I had a few conversations though with Ryan Lewis at South Estuary, and he had done something similar, some kind of search engine earlier on, but it hadn't been active for a while. And I had already been thinking that, right? I think he's also in software, right? And so of course we have that same sort of bent, probably, of like, oh, this needs a search engine, right? This needs a way for me to figure out all these little things. I love connecting, like I said, the dots. So how do we do that better? Well, we need to build tools, right, for better finding things. So I had been thinking about that since, like, I don't know, after the first 100 hours of Paul Vanderclay. I was like, there's a lot here and a lot of things get referenced, and I would love to be able to more efficiently reach into certain topics, right, and dig in and be like, well, what does this little corner think about blank, right? What do they think about AI, right? And then you can search for something about artificial intelligence and you find all the things that are related to it. So I was like, well, this is going to be a project of mine after South Estuary. I was like, I'm going to get this done. And so I took some of Ryan's work that he'd already done. He had grabbed a lot of the transcripts, and but I was like, well, there's a problem with the transcripts, right? YouTube transcription is hit or miss, right? So I was like, well, I'm expanding this project. I'm going to retranscribe all the videos. So we retranscribed all 10,000 something videos or whatever from this little corner at the moment.
How do you go about doing that? That's mind blowing.
Well, thankfully, like, basically since, in the past few years, we've had good advances in like transcription, right? Thanks to like the big AI boom, right, that's going on. I don't remember when OpenAI's Whisper came out, but Whisper and a few other like better models for doing audio transcription came out. I think YouTube just uses a really low quality or fast, cheap model right now. It's good enough, right, for most people, but I used one that was a little better, I think. So we do get some more accurate results, I think.
Well, okay, I'm absolutely not technical, so this is going to be a
Sure.
really dumb question,
No, no,
but
no. Yeah.
like there's 10,000 videos. If I'm thinking, oh, I have to transcribe all these, I'm thinking I have to physically
Physically, yeah. Right.
at least tap on each one of them and put it into this Whisper thing or whatever it is. And even just that much, if Whisper does all the rest of it, even that is a massive job. Or do you get Whisper to go out and do a crawl to kind of grab the stuff so you don't have to physically tap on each one or?
Yeah, so we already have to do a crawl, right, to see all the YouTube videos in the first place, right? So the process that I thought up kind of was, the classic. We have a list of channels. We go check on the channels, we get their video lists. So then we have a list of all the videos and their URLs, and then you go to each of those. And I think originally Ryan was just, you can just pull the transcript. You can just do download transcript basically, and that's not too hard to do programmatically. Then the next step is download each of the videos and then run a transcriber, or download, really, you just want the audio from the videos. So you get
You
the
mean
audio.
you tell your your
The
you
program does
tell
it.
you tell your program, download all the videos
It's
where?
just looping through them.
Just putting him in the cloud altogether, or
No. So I,
no. I'm asking a really
no.
dumb question.
It's not, because you could do it in the cloud, right? That's possible. I do a lot of things. So there, in chunks of my life that we've skipped over, I'm very much into like privacy, or I was, I was very like a big, and so I was like, well, I got to run all my services at home. So I have like a few servers in my house, right? Just a few different computers that are dedicated to doing various workloads, or, and one of them is an AI server that I was using back in 2023 when like GPT-3 was big, and Facebook had put out Llama, right? Their open source models, and I was running, large language models here. That was kind of the point of it, which is fun. It was very interesting. And so I kind of repurposed it for the moment, as it wasn't doing much, to do this
I mean, what
task.
kind of storage capacity do you need to download 10,000 videos?
Well, I just keep them temporarily. In fact, so like I said, I'm downloading the audio as a WAV file, and then we convert it down to MP3 when we're done. So I'm storing them as a much lower fidelity, whatever, for future archival. So the storage capacity is not super huge. It's in the hundreds of gigabytes, I think, for all the audio or something like that. But yeah, so then I'm just having it run again using the same tools that people use for AI inference, right? GPUs, namely, doing the audio inference. And you can run those in batches. So running large numbers of chunks of audio, basically 40 seconds at a time, but maybe doing 40 of those in parallel. And it's, spitting out a chunk of text, and then we're just storing that all together as a big text thing in a database, basically. And then that's searchable. So yeah, I kind of have it set up to keep both the original transcript and a secondary transcript. I think a lot of like live streams, which some of the corner does now, don't have transcripts by default either. So
So this is actually much more complicated thing than I thought when you said you had done that. I imagined somehow that there was a crawler that could just go out into all the videos and bring up the search, like when you're searching through them. But you've actually got hard copy of all the text of all the transcripts stored someplace that your crawler is going through. And then when new videos come out, you add them in.
Yeah, I do a recrawl. That's why, so actually, interestingly enough, there are, in my search, there are videos that don't exist anymore. Some of them are from Ryan's original excursion, I think. But yeah, so you can find some probably that the text is there, but there's no video that matches with it anymore, which is
Well,
interesting.
one of the reasons this is super fascinating to me is that I've told a lot of different people on my channel that I have this big idea that I always thought I should put into a book somehow, and I have some concept now of how a book might come out of this thing, and so as I've taken time off from the channel, I'm trying to put these ideas together.
Sure.
But one of the things that I really need, and I don't have the time, is to go back through my whole, because I have like 400 videos maybe, and they're each an hour and a half long. To go back through all of those and find the places where the clips are of the pertinent information. Because while I was doing my research through the channel, I was also, because I'm talking to people about their work, my part of it is only a very small part of each video because it's mostly the person that I've invited on to talk to.
Sure.
So I don't know how to get at all that stuff and just clip it out so that I can actually have a text that I can look at and then edit it and use it to put into the book concept.
Right.
But it sounds like it might be possible to just take the transcripts of all my videos. If I had that all in one place, maybe I could, how would I do that? Ask AI to tell AI the kind of text I'm looking for and have AI find the timestamps of that material, or
Maybe. As it stands, the way that I did it, is time stamped in 40 second chunks. Or if we were using the other transcription, they do, I think Google's is like 2 second chunks, but so then you kind of have to search for the words you're looking for. I had considered this, but it was a bigger project than I wanted to do. You can do there's a better word for it, but what is the word? There's a way that when you transcribed audio, you can try to pick out different speakers. So it's possible, right, that in the future you could, you could do it now, but if you took all your videos, you could probably separate you and the other speaker with some accuracy, right? And that would probably help accelerate that if you're, looking for an easier way to search. But per your recommendation, actually, when we were speaking, I think the barbecue for South Estuary, I put in a button. There's a button on my search for generating like an MLA citation because you were like, oh, people should make it easier to cite these things.
Oh, you
Yeah.
do. Oh, wow, that's
Yeah.
terrific.
Because it
Well,
has
so one
a.
of the things I noticed when I was using your search engine is that I can get really granular, and it will bring up the exact place in the transcript with the timestamp and everything, and it will actually link me to it. So, I mean, it's very seamless. You've really done an amazing thing there.
Thank you. I won't take too much credit, because for a few reasons, right? It's hard to when you're using like a lot of already existing technology, right? You're using things that are you're putting together a lot of things, as a lot of programming is, right? But between that and the fact that, and I think we talked about this a little before we started, a lot of it's vibe coded, right? So a lot of this, I a lot of this is done working with an AI to write a lot of the code. It's not that I couldn't write it myself. I'll keep telling myself that for a while. But a very different experience to just kind of have a conversation with the machine, right? And the machine is spitting out code or making changes for you in different places. And, you know, so in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm more architected it than I actually did the building, which is very interesting. It's a very different paradigm from what I was taught, right, in school and what I learned and what I did for a long time, or at least for 5 years or whatever. Yeah, so it's very different to be in this kind of age of generative code. And
So how much do you have to know about coding in order to vibe code with the AI?
depends on like the scale of your project, because I think for some small applications, right, almost nothing. I think you can, you know, I think when it first came out, or when like we first got Copilot and things like that, it feels kind of like you have like a junior developer, or maybe someone who just got out of college, or maybe someone who's still in college learning how to program, right? So you have someone who can like help you do some stuff, but they're not going to be like quite ready for a full scale project, right? But they can fix some things, or you know, whatever, fix your syntax. Now it's growing, right, where it can increasingly do more as an agent. You know, you might be able to tell it to do something and sit back for 15 minutes while it goes and works, which is kind of different. Still imperfect. I still have to have a decent bit of understanding of the way that what it's using kind of works, some common pitfalls and things like that, right? But certainly you can see the trend that it's becoming less and less, right? If you said, I would like a web server, and I would like my web page, and I would like this page, and I, you know, want it to have that sparkles on it, right? It can do all that, right? That's not like it would just be able to do that. So yeah, you have to know, you certainly have to know some, and you have to know about your infrastructure still and things like that. But yes, it's moving, I feel like, people who work on code more towards a managerial or architectural role in some ways. There's certainly a lot of niche, or you know, maybe not even niche, areas where high performance matters, right? And having a really strong understanding of the code base matters, right? And so I think those areas are pretty well protected from generative stuff so far, but it's still helpful, right? It can still catch you on things that you might have missed, even if you're writing it all yourself. But yes, so for the actual search, like again, a lot of it was, you know, I had the idea, I knew what underlying architecture I wanted, right? I knew what kind of database I wanted to use, and kind of what I wanted the flow to be. But a lot of the pieces that connect those things together were code written by an AI, right? Written in Python. It's very good at writing Python. And you know, it just, again, if I need to fix something in it or change something or add a feature, you know, you just kind of say, hey, this isn't quite working how we want it to. How do we change this, right? What can we do to change this? And yeah, it leads to some weird things from like a I won't say existential standpoint, but from like a philosophical standpoint, it's like, can I take credit for all of this that I've done? Kind of, but also kind of not, right? I feel a little weird sometimes when I get ready to say, oh, I wrote this. I'm like, well, I didn't really, but you know, I had the idea.
Well, I mean, you had so the physical part of grabbing the videos and all that. How much time did that take? Finding 10,000 videos and putting them into this thing so it could
Oh, I mean,
run the program.
because it's like, again, a type of automation, like it had to spend a lot of time doing that, you know, here, right? The first run, I think, when I did just the ones that Ryan had, maybe, you know, was 20 or 30 hours, right? Of it just working, right? Going through, finding the thing, download the
Well,
thing,
the
et cetera.
program, but that's program time. You didn't have to physically be there when that was happening.
I mean, but yeah, time that I was sitting here, like actually working on it, I don't know. It's hard to tell, because it's a very different flow again than like, because sometimes you may make a change yourself, and then you may say, let's update this, and then you walk away while it does that, or you do something else, you know, and so you kind of go back and forth. So, you know, over the course of a few weeks, right, this was worked on to get it to where I wanted it and how I liked it, kind of thing. But yeah, the actual time of like actually working on it myself is kind of hard to tell, right? Once again, it adds to a little bit of the like, the experience is very different, right?
Well, you have, I think you're going to have a lot of thankful followers
I
that
hope
you did
so. I hope
that.
so. Yeah, because I've been giving it out to like random different people within the community, because I don't actually know how well it's going to do with a ton of people. We'll find out very soon, I suppose. We'll find out how it does with multiple users. But
Did you tell
yeah.
Paul about it yet?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So I had a randos chat with Paul at some point, a few maybe a month ago. I think so. But yeah, I did tell Paul and a few other people who are creating, like I want to tell people who actually made the content, right? Their content is being indexed there. They should probably use it, right? I think the first person I told was Grim, because he seems like someone who loves to pull content from all kinds of different places. So I was like, hey, you should try this, because I think even Ryan was like, yeah, Grim got a lot of use case out of the previous iteration. So
Is
yeah.
there a quick and easy way to clip something from that? I mean, this is another question entirely. I mean, Grim is always clipping stuff and then uploading it or using it as a part of his videos. And I would love to be able to do that kind of thing to make my content more interesting, but I don't know how to do it. Is there an easy way to do
There is,
it?
but I don't know it, right? I know
Oh.
people, I know there are good tools for it, but I'm not sure. I mean, YouTube already lets you grab like grab chunks as it is a little bit, but for downloading it and like moving it somewhere else, I'm not sure. And there are
Yeah, and I
definitely
mean a lot of the edit functions that are on some of the video apps and stuff. It's not just, you can't just, it's hard to find the beginning and the end of each chunk and actually clip it out that way. There's always, something happens, there's 2 seconds off or something like that. I really would like anybody who's listening, if you have an easy way to do this, let me know. Because there's so many times I would love to just put out clips of things or like a 5 minute clip or a 10, YouTube will only let you clip 1 or 2 minutes, something like that. But to do a 5 or 10 minute clip, or I know a lot of the really good content creators, they snip something out of the middle of the talk and they put it at the front. And I've avoided doing that because this is a weird thing that happens when you go to edit a video to, like, I always have to edit my videos just to put my that little music piece at the beginning, which was actually a task that was done by Chris Petkow, who was one of the early people in the corner. He's not on the corner anymore because he got married then and he had children and then he started a painting business, and so he's very, very busy with his real life. But he built that little 30 or 15 second clip for me. And what if I have a video that's 400 megabytes and I have that clip, which is maybe 20 megabytes? If I put the clip on the front of the 450 megabytes and marry them and then go to upload it, it's now over a gig, actually 2 or 3 gig. I don't understand why that happens, but then that means that it makes a lot longer upload time and everything. So I've avoided adding other clips to that because I'm afraid it's just going to keep magnifying the size of the file.
I think, and I'm not like a video editor, I think it needs to be retranscoded after you do that. Because yeah, there's a way to seamlessly meld that without it increasing your size. Yeah. What I was gonna say is, what you should do is you should find someone in the corner who wants to learn to be an editor. And you should get them to cut their teeth a little bit,
Yeah,
because
I mean
it's a
anybody who wants to do that, I've got lots of editing chores, but
Yeah.
that's partly why I'm kind of thinking it's time for me to retire from the game, because all the content that's coming out now is so polished and it has all the B-roll and it has the great intros, and I just physically can't do that. I don't have the time, so.
Sure. Though I mean, back to kind of what we were talking about the corner, right? You don't have to have that. That's another thing. The corner is so organic and really like plenty of people are quite unpolished, or not that yours is unpolished. I think yours always look very nice, but the content is very good, so and salient in the corner, right? So the presentation is not it's not required in my mind, right? Obviously there's a value to good presentation, but for the actual I think for a lot of people who consume the content in the corner, it could be for some in some cases a podcast, and it really, that it would be just as good in a lot of ways. So, I wouldn't worry too much about that. Again, I understand though, again, the desire to not have to do all the editing, because editing is hard. And people make really nice things. I, people who do polished editing are, it's a huge art, right? Or who spend the time to do like, not that I don't really think anyone in the corner does this, but elaborate sets that they're working on in their background. I guess some of the things that are referenced by the corner, like interviews and stuff, have nice sets, but it does make a difference in some ways, but I don't think it's required for any of the corner content. I've always, because I don't think I had seen your channel before I met you, right? I think, yeah, I don't think I had at all. And then I went and looked, and I'm like, wow, you have all these amazing thinkers, and all these like really high impact people. And I was like, that's awesome, right? I was like, that's crazy how many influential thinkers you have on your channel. And to, like, I would expect your channel to be huge, like seemingly, but yeah, it was striking, right, to see that, and that there's such high quality
Well, I
content in the
mean, that's
corner.
part of why I, if my content could be more polished, I might get not just corner views, but actually, like I get
Right,
quite a
sure.
few views if I have on one of these thinkers. But then, which is a good thing because I would feel bad asking them to take their time to talk to me if I could only provide them 200 or 300 views as a reward for talking to me, But the other thing that I have found super interesting is that people, even who are super busy with very meaningful careers, are so gracious and willing to talk to you if you ask them.
Right.
I mean, I was so surprised when the first time I kept thinking, I want to talk to this Michael Levin guy. And
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how could I talk to him? He's got so many balls in the air he's got many different areas of his life where he's got companies going, he's got his research labs, he's got all these ideas. Why would he talk to me? And then the idea came to me, what if I gave him some value add by introducing him to some people that he would never meet in a million years, but I know he should talk to, like John Verbaeke
Right.
or
Yeah.
Mark Solms or some of those guys.
And you're really describing again the value of the corner. And maybe, some people could say, oh, that's just like the value of networking, but the corner represents a certain type of like, it is the power of networking, right? Of this powerful sort of way to build communities and introduce people and concepts and things like that in ways that are novel and allow for growth, right? That you can't really get otherwise. Like the value proposition is like you're describing is not necessarily a bunch of views. It is getting to spend time with good conversation partners. Let's say even, like even just any individual interview, the value in the corner seems to be, I'm going to have a good conversation with someone about something that I care about or that we both care about. And we're going to synthesize new ideas. And that in itself, like, is already super valuable, regardless of the audience. The audience is great, and it's good to contribute and helpful to share it with other people because it's inspirational in a lot of ways, and helps again synthesize new ideas elsewhere. But yeah, I think the real value add of the corner, right, is the conversations, is the estuary too, right? Yeah, because we didn't touch on the estuary protocol any, but I found that to be really cool. Really enjoyed Estuary, and the way that the little groups work and the way that idea synthesis occurs there was really nice.
And do you have an estuary near you that
I
you can
don't.
go to physically?
No, I would like to. And there were some other Charlotte folks who I spoke with, who had mentioned, maybe wanting to start one. So I've been trying to get in contact with a couple people. So that may end up occurring in the near
Yeah.
future. There's actually one
Well, I
person
mean,
who I can't remember from.
one or two of you just has to go through the training, and then you're
Sure.
good to. I mean, I got the same thing here. Myself and another friend are thinking we should start one here. You know, we should keep pushing it out into the future. But there was an estuary here last year. There was a pastor who was doing it, but he could kind of never get it off the ground. There were never more than like two people at any of the meetings, so you can't really. I mean, you can still have good conversations, but it's very hard to do the protocol when you only have two people or three
Right.
people.
And I feel like, it would help immensely if you can kickstart it from a digital space, right?
Yeah.
That seems like a really valuable route, to getting them going. Because yeah, it's hard enough just to get people to sign up to come to anything regularly, right? And I hear that's getting worse. I don't know if that's true, but I hear from people in my social spheres that that is getting worse. I'm friends with a lot of educators, and they say that kids these days, right? That a lot of like college students don't seem to do things as much, right? Go or attend things, or they say that campus is kind of dead a lot of times, which is interesting. I don't know. Again, maybe it's just a small sample size, but the trend feels like it's there, where it's harder to get embodied events. Though, I hear. And you can hear it some echoed within the corner too, that there might be kind of a reversal of that coming, right? Where people say, AI, generative AI has made the internet, epistemically problematic to say the least. Maybe there are a lot worse things you could call it, right? And so the only real way to interact, the only way to know that things are real, is in person, right? You just have to go actually be with the people. That seems like
Well,
a,
I know
yeah.
that for my husband and I just don't know how we would even function if we weren't part of a life group that met every week, because that, you have somebody that you're sort of accountable to on a weekly basis. And I don't mean accountable like they're going to check in on what's happening,
Sure.
is this not they're going to say, are you being a good girl,
Yeah.
but they are going to say, you said last week that you've been feeling kind of sick, are you doing better, just somebody who kind of knows that you're alive and keeps track of you. And if you're not there, then they say, hey, is everything okay, because then you have real people that you're connected to and they become family. And then like last night we had a white elephant party over at our house with the potluck with all the people from our life group, and you have real embodied connection to people, and you can laugh and have fun, and it's a whole different world. And so these are then when you're at church on Sunday, you run into these people and you can talk to them and you have relationships. And that's especially important for us because both my parents passed away in 1990, and George's parents have been gone now for 10 or 15 years. He still has brothers and sisters, but they all live on the East Coast. So basically, this is our family. And then, of course, I think of all the corner people as my family too. But yeah, it's going to be increasingly difficult if we don't turn back and get people more and more involved in personal kind of things.
Yeah, and it's tough, right? Because I come from very much like a view of like I love technology, right? I may have said this when we were speaking there at Esther, I'm not sure, but like, you encounter people like Paul Kingsnorth, right? Who seems to be gaining a lot of popularity within the corner space, or at least some of his ideas are, and I'm like, I don't, I love what we've done with technology in a lot of ways. I see drawbacks, right? I understand. But I would never press a button to like end the internet like he would, right? I think I had read his original article, The Neon God. Maybe I don't know how original it is. It's from a few years ago before he came out with his book, where he was talking about that. And like I understand the concern, but this little corner wouldn't exist without the internet, right? And maybe, it could be argued, you could say, oh, well, you would have found, the correct social institutions in person, but I don't know, right? I don't know if it would have been as robust or kind of as varied, right? You don't get to get the kind of exposure to such a wide range of thoughts and people. And I think I prefer that in the end. So it's hard for me, to understand what the reversal is going to look like. I think it was a conversation between Kings North and Mary Harrington, and she was saying, the way out is through. And he was kind of on the other side of that argument, but that resonates with me. I think we can utilize the power of all of this, right? All this infrastructure to fix the problem, right? Maybe that's naive. Humanity does that, where they're like, we'll use the technology to fix the problems caused by our technology. But I actually do think that way, kind of in a hopeful sense, right? Building intentional communities
I mean,
digitally.
sure, if you think about it. I mean, people have been saying this about technology from the beginning when they first started writing stuff down on rocks. They said, oh no, if we write it down, we won't be able to remember it anymore. You're offloading your intellect by writing it down on a rock. So if you wind it all the way back, you'd have to get rid of every single technology from the beginning and just, but then even who knows, maybe even speech was a technology in the beginning. Because otherwise you could just be in your thoughts. So, yeah, I tend to agree with Mary Harrington. The way out has to be through, because every, like the Industrial Revolution came along and created all this chaos in the world and poverty and horrific suffering and everything else. But afterwards, so much more beneficial for people not to be slaving, or to even have sewers and clean water and all of these things that we have now that we wouldn't have had if we didn't permit the steam engines. And I mean, it's crazy, crazy to think about. So yeah, I mean, I still remember the I moved to California in 1990, and the hyperlink stuff was just coming in at that point. Right. That was at the very beginning of that. And one of the guys at our company was really fascinated with it. And so he was always talking about it. And I'm like, what? What is this going to be? I just couldn't quite picture it. But I think there are a lot of benefits. Just being able to have relationships with people like this. Like during COVID, I knew a lot of people who would have committed suicide if they hadn't had Zoom to talk to people on, because they got locked into their apartments. Basically, they couldn't go anywhere or do anything. Widows and single people, and they had no way to have human contact. So.
And I think I kind of alluded to it. A lot of my friend community are people who I grew up with, but they're now somewhere else, halfway across the country. But I talk to them almost every day, right? And yeah, you can do that with a telephone or whatever, but it's not quite the same multimedia type of interaction. So it really does allow for that. I like the reference to hyperlinks. I think about those a lot too. I think we spoke just a little bit, but and I have to say it again because it's something that doesn't get enough attention. Like electricity, right? This third form of orality, literacy, and then electricity, the kind of interactive component of the internet. I think this little corner is an electrate space, right? Because it asks the reader, right, the experiencer, to be involved, right? To you can kind of choose your own path and also contribute, right? So there's this kind of hybrid, you're getting kind of a hybrid system. It has, things like oral culture, right? It has features like oral culture, and it has features like literate culture, because there's a lot of text. But there's also these other things, right? These new kind of emergent properties of, when you go to experience this little corner, like I did, right? When you first come in, you get to kind of pick how you enter and where you go next, right? You kind of travel through it, and like you were talking about, you look at some videos and you go from this one to the other one, right? I think Paul likes to reference the algo, right, which serves you something up, right? But that's a very different sort of experience than reading a book or, someone telling you a story. The story is, again, kind of this dance that you're having with the thing you're interacting with. And hyperlinks are like the the people who theorize about it, right, originally, but like hyperlinks are the foundation to that, because you go to a web page and you get to pick what you click, right? You get to pick how the story progresses from there, how you experience the art or the, new information. And I see this little corner as being like a very interesting outcropping of that. That's close to the kind of like bare source of that, it seems like. And it works well, I think. But yeah, we wouldn't have that without the internet,
Yeah.
So,
Well, so is there anything else that you'd like to talk about before we wind this up, or any questions you have about ancient history of the space or
ancient
anything?
history. I mean, it would be interesting to know, and I may have asked this in person, but I think it's always good to keep kind of getting people's thoughts on it. Like, what is the growth of the space looked like to you, and what does it look like going forward? Since you've been in it for a while and you know a lot of the key people here, like what does that progression look like?
I'm probably not the best person to ask because my channel has always been kind of on the periphery of what you would call the corner, because I have not been primarily concerned with maintaining relationships in the corner and talking to randos and, interviewing Paul and things like that. But I have mainly been concerned with this idea that I have about what is the latent space of possibilities. What kind of structure is it that lies underneath the particles in the universe? So I've been kind of trying to research that by talking to a lot of people in the science and philosophy world. And that's what led me on my path. And then once in a while, I talk to somebody from the corner because that's how I got started, because I got started with Paul. So I was kind of tracking, I was keeping up with Paul for the first 3 years, maybe, but then everything started to explode with all the new channels and everything. And I was trying to keep up with them. And eventually I just thought I can't do that and spend the time I need to spend on the research for my own channel, which some weeks was taking 40 hours just to get ready for a talk because I don't know anything about anything. So whenever I talk to one of these people, I have to learn it from the ground up. But I noticed that things really changed about, I'm not exactly sure when it was that Christian Baxter started his channel, but maybe it was a year and a half or 2 years ago.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And he was on, he just came on the internet and made a little very brief clip of there's this thing called the TLC, and this is what it is, and this is what it looks like to me, because I've been lurking in the background for years watching this thing. And that just kind of caught fire because here was somebody who actually took the time to try to put into words what is this thing that we're doing. And then Christian just started building his own channel and started, really talking to interesting people and getting more and more going on. And there was Grimm's channel and all of these things that were happening. Chad's channel with Friday Morning Nameless and there's just a whole bunch of people that came on at the same time and it started exploding. So right now there are so many channels that I just can't keep up with everybody. I've tried to talk with each one of them. I started a new channel so that there's still some connections between my channel and all of that. But I also feel like a lot of times when they talk about the flotilla, they don't even link the meaning code because I'm sort of over on the edge. And that's okay. I mean, I don't resent that at all or anything, but it means makes me not a very good person to understand. Hold on a second.
Are you sure?
I see somebody at the door.
Okay.
So I'm probably not the most pertinent person to ask that question of, but it has certainly been a wild ride. And I started going to the estuary conferences maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when they had the first conference. The first conference I went to was in Chino, which actually I think was the second conference. The first one was in Thunder Bay, Ontario, and I wasn't able to make that. But I have found the estuary conferences to be just deeply meaningful and met, just developed really deep relationships with the people that I've met there. And it's fun to talk with somebody again that I have met at these different conferences. And it feels like we can go deep so fast. And the other thing I really like about the corner is you can just be real. You don't have to have any. You don't have to have any facade. You don't have to pretend you know anything because we're all beggars searching for bread, basically. We're all looking for some crumbs to kind of hold the world together.
Sure. Absolutely. No, and I think, it's something that I think I asked Esther Meek about it maybe, or someone at the time when we were all meeting there at the South Estuary, which was like, how do maybe I didn't ask it, maybe I just thought it. I think I asked it, but it's like, how do we connect the, TLC to external TLC, right? You talk to a lot of people who are outside of it, right? And that's super valuable, I think, right? In that you bring in different sort of philosophies and ideas, and they get kind of filtered in, and I think that's super helpful, right? I wish there was more of that, I think, because there's a risk, which sometimes people point out, I think, too much maybe within the space, of it becoming circular, right? Where it's just the channels talking about the channels talking about the channels, and they're just kind of like self-commentary. And so it's super valuable to have the, there's a good word for it. And like, as you mentioned, Michael Levin, like on the edge of the cells, right? The portals, like where things come into a cell, right? That let things in. And so I think it's really important to have like those sort of things within the space, regardless. I mean, you're like this little corner is Kurt Jemungle, right? You're like him,
I do have to say something happened that was so cool 3 or 4 years ago. I don't remember exactly when it was, but Kurt on one of his episodes talked about 40 channels that you should pay attention to, and mine was one of them. I was
really?
like,
That's
wow, I've
yeah.
really arrived.
I mean, yeah, no, because you cover a lot of the same sort of content, or provide that same sort of those like areas of insight to the corner, right? And get to expose some of the people here to that, which is good, right? I think it's very
I
valuable.
wish that I could expose some of the thinkers that I've talked to. I wish I could expose them to like the estuary conferences because that would be so amazing. But the estuary conferences are very Christian adjacent, and some of those people that I've talked to, they're like,
Yeah.
want to go there. So I think they would be very reluctant to accept an invite, but I might be wrong on that.
Yeah, I think it depends on who it is for sure. Yeah.
Because if that happened, then they might tell other people about what's going on. And but that's a thought. Maybe we should ask Kurt Scheimungel
Yeah.
to come to an estuary. Would that be something?
No, and I think he seems like someone who would, because he
He's
was,
very interested in issues of faith.
yeah.
The he did a 4-hour conversation with Wolfgang Smith before Wolfgang Smith passed away. That was just the most brilliant. I mean, because by that point, Wolfgang Smith was, I think he was 94 when I talked to him, but by the time Kurt talked to him, I think he was like 96 years old.
Yeah.
And to be able to navigate a conversation like that with a brilliant man like Wolfgang Smith and really help him to open up and to be real in a space like talking with Kurt. It was just amazing. And so Kurt is able to talk about those kinds of things. And I think he would really love the Estuary Protocol
Oh yeah,
because he's
I think.
really into that, getting at the deeper things in every conversation. And
No, and I think he would make a good speaker, right? Too. I think I, you
yeah, for
know,
sure.
he I saw his presentation that he gave. I don't remember where it was about. His critiques of simulation theory, right? And there, it was a really good talk, right? And I think people at the Estuary would like that because it's kind of fun, but it's also deep, and it can go deeper if you want. And
Do you
he
happen to know where he's located?
I don't. I don't. I, I'm not like, I don't watch him a ton. I encounter him on the periphery. I went through like a UFO UAP arc for myself. And so Kurt covers some of that, and I saw some of his content from that. Very interesting. Some of the physicists he talks to. And I saw him on Parker's Ponce's, not me, Parker, but Parker Zedekes. I had a good conversation with him. And that's a very, it's a philosophy channel, but he's very Christian. So, and Kurt's conversation there was very deep, and again, felt like something I could have heard at the estuary. Right? It feels like something I could have heard on in TLC, right? The way
Well,
he
I was
was.
thinking if we knew where he was located, then the next time they do an estuary in
You
that
just put it
place,
better, yeah.
well, it would be closer so he wouldn't have to fly someplace and take up a lot of his extra time, you know.
Yeah, that's
Because
fair.
I'm sure he's super busy too. He puts out so much content. And yeah. So I Parker's Ponce, that's a channel I have to look up. I'm not familiar with that one, but
Oh yeah. He's one of my favorite people in the philosophy space, I think, because he that was the thing I asked, I think, at Estuary was like, where's the TLC's connection to philosophers? There are a lot of philosophers on YouTube, right? Who spend time, having long form discussions, but not a ton of them that are connected in. Esther's one of like maybe the first who seems to have like kind of connected to the space. But I feel like people like Parker Settegast are like super good fits, right? He does a really good job of like talking to a whole bunch of interesting philosophers on, consciousness, simulation theory, like epistemic stuff. He was really into AI for a while, just like doing a whole good sort of array. And so I feel like someone like that would be perfect to like, if we could just get one connection to get one node out essentially from our little cluster, that would be really, really valuable. Oh, and that's something you should, sorry, you reminded me of like of nodes and clusters. Something you should try on the search, and this is for other people if they end up using it at some point, is that it's a little crude. It's not like the best made yet, but I did basically have it scrape through all the links that are inside of any video description. And if they're within the space, you can see the links and backlinks to each other. Right. So you can see where a video references other videos. So you can go look at the graph. So you can look at the graph and then look at the graph a few nodes out. So you can say, like, well, Paul, referenced the meaning code here, and the meaning code is referencing this video over here. Right. And it kind of expands outwards. And so you can see the graph. And I don't know. It's always just like a personal, it's a personal like tendency of mine to want to see graphs. But it's helpful, right? Because you can kind of see like, oh, okay, this video is kind of central. A lot of things reference this particular video. And so, yeah, if you look at the search, some videos will show like a reference count. They'll be like, oh, this is referenced by 10 other videos or something like that within the space. And so it's just a different
Really
way
cool. So
to
that's like the
explore.
what that's way they talk about scientists and stuff. They'll say they give there's this I can't remember what they have some sort of term. This is his H number or something, which is the number of references that have been made to his work.
Right.
So somebody with a really high H number, you know, he's like very central to everything. So
Yeah. So you can sort by that too. Again, the count is kind of crude because it's just whatever someone put in the description. And some people are better about referencing the videos that they're referencing, but yeah, they're like, I think it's like one of Jordan Peterson's early ones and one of Verveke's are like really high. They're referenced like 80 times within TLC. Like a bunch of people want to come back to this particular thing. Yeah, useful for exploring.
Wow. Well, okay, this has been great. And I loved what you talked about with the TLC being the electric space. I might even use that for the title of the video.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll put in the chat how it's spelled, because it's like that. Because electricity is a weird thing. And again, kind of a
Oh,
niche.
electricity, not
Yeah.
electricity,
No.
electricity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it comes from, there's something that they talk about like with the word trace, but I can't remember the portmanteau that they're doing there.
So
But
you
yes.
didn't, so you, did you say an electric space or an
No,
electra space?
electrate.
Electrate space.
Yeah, I mean it's such a similar word. Yeah, so I do have to like spell it out. But yeah, there's some like philosophers like Gregory Ulmer, I think, is one of them, is kind of central to that space. But they were just super super interested in the idea of like hypertext media, hypermedia, and the way that people interact with it and how it was going to change. This is back in the 90s when they wrote it, like how it's going to change the way people interact with content. And you can think of people like Marshall McLuhan as being kind of like a father of that sort of, I don't know that he would be electric, but he's like, it's that sort of work leading up to this. So the medium is the message is very similar to the idea that the way you interact with the data, right, the way it's presented on a web page or web experience is going to change the way that you receive it, right? So yeah, it's a cool little thing. It's one of my pet philosophies that I just like because it explains a lot of things. I literally, it was Jonathan Pageau, I think, and he was talking to someone. It might have been Mary Harrington again, someone like that. And they're like, yeah, they're like, what's going on here is like not literacy anymore. It's something else. It's some further on thing. I was like listening to him. I was like, it's electricity. Like it's this third thing. Like I know what it is. I know the answer. But you know, I think it does explain a lot of the things that we see on the internet, the way that we people interact on the internet now. So it's just a fun thing to think about.
Yeah, well, sure. I'm gonna look that up for sure. And then you also said before we got recording, you said this is going to be a little improv today.
Oh, right.
And I remember you telling me when we were in North Carolina that you like to do improv.
When I said that and you reached back out to me about improv, I was like, well, I mean, I like the idea of improv and I've done a little bit in the past, but I'm not like anything in terms of trained for improv.
No, but I mean, you enjoy that kind of thing.
I
You're
do. I do.
willing to put yourself in that space and be vulnerable, because that's a very vulnerable space to be in. When I was a drama major in college, well, a drama and speech and English major kind of all clumped together, and we had to take a class in improv, and that's just not my gig, man.
Yeah.
I need everything spelled out for me. So, I just really admire people who can do any sort of improv. And anyway, I thought it would be fun to have you and Alan talk to each other,
Right. Yes.
because that's
Yeah.
his gig. So maybe in the new year we'll put something together there.
Sure. No, because this was great. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much, Parker. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day and all the time that you put into the search engine. This is really exciting, and I hope people start using it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
So
glad to contribute.
have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you. You too.
And bye-bye.
Goodbye.